And we are back, Bobcat Radio Monday edition. Ryan Marcus, your host here with Matthew Hamill, our producer, Jason Harris. Anything going on with the poll there, Jason? We were just talking about the Texas State schedule. Maybe you want to weigh in on what you think the biggest home game will be.
Right now, Houston in a runaway lead, 83% going Houston, although Arkansas State on the board as well with 17%. I think people are remembering, 2 years ago, Texas State rolls into the hometown, rolls into Arkansas State and gets a big win over there at the end of that season.
The seventh win?
Yeah, not qualified, but try to get, a couple more bowl voters to look our way. Didn't end up working. Then last season, Arkansas State rolls into San Marcos and gets that win back. So, I can't say it's a rivalry because they just haven't played enough games yet. I think you got to get a lot of games under your belt before you call it a rivalry. But a lot of people getting interested in that game.
Speaking of rivalries, Texas State getting set to take on UTSA. Not next year, but I believe it starts the following year, and that should bud into a nice football rivalry. And that's really got me jazzed up because I feel like that's really what's missing for this athletic department. Now, you talked about the Raging Cajuns and how they kind of had the Texas State's numbers in a lot of sports. But I feel like they're missing that rival and that proximity factor for UTSA. It just lends so nicely to Texas State having a rival.
I'm gonna pass this one over to him. Well, people know how I feel about UTSA.
Oh, no. It's fantastic. I love that we played them in a doubleheader in basketball. Those games had great attendance. It's just kind of a shame that we couldn't start developing this rivalry sooner. It'll be a good opponent for Texas State to play in the future. I like close proximity opponents. That just adds to the easiness that it is to fabricate a rivalry. So I'm excited. It's going to be a good game for Texas State, at least. Whether or not the relationship helps UTSA the way they might want it to could be determined. But I definitely think this will be a good thing for Texas State moving forward.
So I think the best thing about the proximity is when the Bobcats head down to the Alamo Dome to play the Roadrunners, it's 45 minutes to an hour right down the road, and you can go see your team and heckle the home fans a little bit.
Yeah, it's in the few times that, team, whether it's been baseball or basketball that UTSA or even volleyball every now and then, the UTSA either comes to town. You can look at the stadium, and there are a lot more people there. And maybe it's not all Bobcats that have come out to, so support their team. But also, it's to play devil's advocate, I guess, it's nice when away fans get to come down to San Marcos as well and get more, butts in seats, so to speak. And there can be a nice rivalry that goes on the game. But in the fans as well, when you've got opposing fans that are yelling, makes you want to stand up and cheer louder when something goes good for the Bobcats and vice versa. When the away team does good, their fans get up and go. And I think it makes for a much better atmosphere, whatever the athletic event is. And so, yeah, I'm all about it, whether it is UTSA or, Incarnate Word is very close, even though they're a smaller school. I love, not only being able to travel to the games, but welcoming the away fans of San Marcos as well.
And that is secretly one of the challenges of the Sun Belt Conference is the wide range of geography that separates the school. I mean, when Texas State traveled to Appalachian State, whether it's football, basketball, soccer, what have you, it's hard for students and for alumni who don't live there to get across the country and go to Appalachian State. So that is one of the difficulties about the Sun Belt Conference. You're trying to build rivalries. Well, not too many people from Louisiana are going to come to San Marcos whenever the Raging Cajuns travel over here. I mean, some will, the dedicated folks, but as far as a mass scale, a section of your crowd being dedicated to ULL fans, it's a little bit difficult to make.
Yeah, the Texas State, in terms of proximity in the Sun Belt, no team's really too close to them, but I think it's about time we should shift to Texas State basketball, and there's some struggles right about now. It does not look good in Hoopland if you're the men's or the women's basketball team. And where do we begin? That's really the question that I'm wondering. I mean, we're going to start with the men's team, but where do we begin? It just seems like they're in a catastrophic meltdown right now. I mean, if you just look at the record, they've lost four in a row, and they've lost six of their last seven games. And the extended road trip over the past two weekends, it didn't do them any favors. Again, get that four-game losing streak And the games were closer last weekend than they were 2 weekends ago against the Louisiana schools. But does that hurt your team more when you have those close games? And it almost is like you felt like you could have won and you didn't.
What I will say about the road trip is the Bobcats have struggled on the road this entire season. Their record on the road is 3-9, but in conference play, they're 1-6 in conference road games. And that's just, you're not doing yourself any favors. You make the home games far more important by dropping these games on the road. It's almost a gimme for the other team. But to lose a game close never hurts. I mean, maybe in the weeks from now you can use hindsight and say, well, they lost this close game and then kept losing games after that. But I feel like to lose close, especially to some of the upper echelon teams, just shows that you can compete. You know, maybe it was one or two misplays or a bad pass that leads to a fast break that puts them that just two or three extra points farther away than you can catch, and then you end up losing the game. But yeah, it's tough. I do like to see the fight, though, in the close games, the grit that they show.
I agree. It's, you know, eventually it hurts. Maybe it's that, you know, that dagger three-pointer at the very end that you know, there's that initial just, oh, it was so close, we almost had it. But I'll pretty much take that every time over. You're in the end of the 5 minutes to go in the game, and you're down by, you know, 25, 30 points, and there's just no hope in sight. Like, to me, that's where, you know, the casual fan or the 50% fan just kind of gets up and walks out of the stadium. You know, none of us in here, none of our fans out there, obviously, would be doing that. But it's just easier to just say, oh, this one's over. You know, I'll go find all the new something. But as a close game, it keeps you hanging on there, and you're so much more invested in that game when you do.
Well, like I said, the Bobcats lost some close ones this week, losing by a combined 7 points in two games this weekend. They lost to Georgia State on Thursday. I happened to catch that game on ESPN3 while I was up here in the studio producing the game. And the Bobcats, I guess some positives, they did out-rebound both their opponents this weekend, which has been something they've been struggling with all season, is out-rebounding. But the thing is, the bench play was just not there. I mean, literally against Georgia State, there were zero bench points. It was not there.
And you can't have that. You can't win basketball games when your starting five are the only people contributing to the team points-wise. I looked at the numbers of that Georgia State game. The bench played a combined 27, 28 minutes. They took two shots, missed them both, and had a 0-for-2 from the free throw line. I believe maybe they had an assist and a couple rebounds, but I'm talking the entire bench. There was an assist and a rebound between five or six players in 27 minutes. 0 points, two shots. You just cannot win basketball games that way.
You know, last week when we talked about it, Ryan, it was consistency was the name of the game, basically. Each one of us went around here, and at some point we brought that word up, and I think Texas State is still looking for it there, you know. And it's nice to see the rebound. We should not take away – that's a big step for Texas State, mm-hmm. is getting that rebound, because that has been a problem all season from the very beginning. So even if it's just one small victory, it's there. It's fantastic, and it's showing they are improving that, but they can't let it slack off because of it in others, which as I say, the bench points, because whether it's Montalvo coming off the bench or Cam Naylor whenever he comes off the bench as well, usually those guys are good for, you know, at least 6 to 8 points, if not more, that we've seen sometimes 15 to 20. So I'll definitely take improvement in the rebounding category, but that doesn't mean you can let slide or slack off on a different category as well.
What I will say, one spot I feel like the Bobcats have been slacking on is that there have been certain stars in the opposing teams that have gone off when they played Texas State. 3 weeks ago, ULM's Nick Coppola had 26 points and 11 for 17 shooting. Georgia State's Marcus Kreider had 24 points on 10 for 14 shooting the other day. And then there was Tukey Brown with 25 points, 18 of those in the first half. You know, he was lights out, 8 for 10 from the floor, 4 or 5 from downtown. I mean, these guys are getting whatever they want, these stars for these opposing teams, you know. These guys need to be highlighted. They need to be scouted, double-teamed, get the ball out of their hands. But the point totals themselves are one thing. I mean, anyone can put up 30 points if you take enough shots. But the fact that these guys are doing it with such high efficiency, 8 of 10, 11 for 17, you know, that's something. It just shows the points for these guys are coming way too easy.
So one of the things I noticed, though, Texas State does a good job sometimes of locking down the opponent's best player, best players. But then there's a secondary guy, like the Marcus Kreider game, Marcus Kreider's game for Georgia State on Thursday, and he has a very good game, and he goes off, and Texas State doesn't do a good job of adjusting to that new player who has a good game.
And, you know, to take nothing away, maybe it's a talent level. I mean, like, because some of these schools have been up in the D1 for quite some time, and I know Texas State's been here a while now, you know. And even so, it's... maybe a lack of Coach Casper getting his players in here. He's been here 3 years now, so it's almost there. But he's still looking at recruiting some of the better players, and whether it's bringing in JUCO players or, you know, freshman players, it's hard to find like that level of talented players to get one of those guys on your team like we do. I would put Imani Ganton in that category. It's so hard, but to get two of them, you know, it takes time to A, get them to your school, to build your school up to a level where, you know, those kind of players want to come to it, and two, to actually get them in here and develop them into that type. So a credit to those teams as well that have, you know, one, two, or sometimes even three guys that can literally put the team on their back and carry the game.
Well, like you said last week, Jason, we were talking about this. The Sun Belt Conference, it's just better this year, flat out.
Like, a lot better, too. That's the thing that blows my mind. It's not just like, okay, you know, you went from 8 wins to 10 wins or 12 wins. No, like, 4-win teams are suddenly, you know, up at the top of the conference now, and that's just mind-blowing.
Yeah, nobody's safe. UT Arlington entered conference play with, like, a 14-2 record. They are now in free-fall mode, whereas Appalachian State played a very tough non-conference schedule, and they're all of a sudden in the middle of the pack because they've done so well since conference play started, and something that any coach in the Sun Belt Conference will preach to you whenever if you ever get a chance to talk to them, is that in this conference, anyone can beat anyone on any given day. And it's just a matter of, you know, who steps up, who makes those clutch plays, and who has those Imani Gants on their team that can put the team on their back. What I've noticed from Texas State is a fourth player is sort of emerging as a decent scoring threat. When you look past Imani Gant, Kaven Gilder, Tilbury, and Ethan Montalvo, then Cameron Naylor, he's had a surgence. In the last five games, he's averaged 12.2 points per game. He's had some big games, and he's doing it in about 30 minutes. And I really feel like if this guy can emerge as a legitimate fourth threat on this team, you know, it just makes it harder to double-team players like Gant and Gilder Tilbury down low when you know that Naylor can be streaking to the basket for easy layups.
So you talk about Cam Naylor, and he has been playing very well for the Bobcats recently. Some guy I'd like to see featured a little more in the offense, and this might sound a little contradictory because he's, I think, the top scorer for Texas State right now. He surpassed Imani Gant, but Kaven Gilder Tilbury, I feel like he just sneakily gets 12 points, you know, he averages about 12 points a game. I would love to see some plays run for him. I feel like he has the talent to be the slasher that the Bobcats need, getting to the rim and spacing, helping, you know, collapse the defense, giving Montalvo some open shots. But I just feel like he's kind of that third guy, and the ball doesn't get to him as much as it should, and he's still scoring.
What I would say is I completely agree with what you're saying. Gilder Tilbury does need more touches, and just one of the heartbreaking plays I saw him make was last Thursday against Georgia State. The Bobcats were up by 8 or 9 points in the second quarter, a few minutes in, looking to increase their lead to double digits. There was a pass down low right under the basket to a wide-open Gilder Tilbury, and you know all he had to do was catch it and go up, and he could have dunked it however he wanted. The ball slipped out of his hands. It was a turnover. Georgia State take a timeout. From that timeout, come back with a 13-0 run and take a commanding lead on that game. And it was just, it's a small, small play, but when you look at it, if he catches that ball cleanly, dunks it, Texas State take a 10-point lead, you know, there's more pressure on Georgia State to score. They're now feeling the pressure being down by double digits. It was just a crucial, crucial play that he did not make that just, you look back and wonder, what if?
I would even liken that into just the season in general. Because when Texas State, when it goes good for Texas State, it goes pretty good, but you can't really see them. They don't string wins together. Like early on in the season, they had a three-game win streak. Now we're in the midst of a 4-game losing streak. But that, you know, back-to-back losses are pretty common for the Bobcats this season so far, and it just seems like when they lose one game, they're way more susceptible to losing that next game as well. And it's just they can't, you know, fight out of it and get back on track. And I mean, that maybe I think that thing about KGT just kind of a microcosm for the season as well. It's hard to get out of that losing rut or you know, the mud or the bog, if you will, when you're stuck so far in it and you just can't seem to pull yourself out.
You took the words out of my mouth, Jason, but I have an interesting stat for you guys. And it's not too hard to find, but it was just something when I was prepping for the show I thought was interesting. I'd like to get your guys' opinion on it. So Texas State, the men's team, is the second best scoring defense in terms of points per game in the Sun Belt Conference, but they're eighth in field goal percentage defense and ninth in three-point percentage defense. What do you guys think that means, or what do you guys think that says about the Texas State team?
Well, we brought up the rebounding issue, and that could be the teams are missing a lot of shots, but getting second-chance points, getting easy putbacks. And I think it also just goes to show how good Texas State can be in the half court, but teams, when they get the Bobcats in the half court, they can force turnovers, they can get easy buckets, they can string together points. You see opposing teams go on runs because they're making shots over and over again. And teams do shoot a high shooting percentage against the Bobcats, just about 40% from three, and if I'm remembering off the top of my head, 45% from the floor, which is, you know, that's a pretty good shooting percentage. If your team was shooting that, you'd be pretty happy.
Yeah, and I think the style of Texas defense that Texas State plays, it tends to make the other opposing defense slow down and set that play. And so they're getting less shots, but they're just with the shots they're getting are going in. So I mean, there's a positive and negative to that as well. If you could take away possessions, you could slow down the game, and they kind of the way Texas State wants you to play against them is great. Exactly what Coach Casper's trying to do. But if the shots are still going in, you know, it's negative either way.
So the Bobcats' next four games are at home. Six of their last nine are at Strahan. You know they play a lot better at home. The schedule's still tough, though. Does this team have enough to make it to the Sun Belt Conference tournament?
Well, I think having more of the games at home is a huge favor for the squad. Certain players, Ethan Montalvo comes to mind. The net is bigger at Strahan for Ethan Montalvo. He really likes shooting at home, and I think a lot of these players, they need some time at home. They couldn't get a better opponent, I think, to play their first home game against the team in UT Arlington, who have proven that they're very good, but they are losers of five of their last seven games. Well, we're coming in on a four-game losing streak ourselves. Something has got to give there, and it'll just be a matter of, I feel the Texas State Bobcats will show up to this game. They'll be feisty. They'll desperately want a win. They know they're playing an opponent that is weakened right now. They're going to be limping into Strahan Coliseum, and it's just a matter of if the support will be there to rally this team to a desperately needed victory.
That was a good analysis. Yes or no?
Yes.
They're going to make it?
Yes.
And I think throughout all this, you got to remember, they're just one game out from a spot right now. You know, there's a tie right above them, two teams that are there. But, I mean, you can't overstate the importance of being at home. And, again, I think State just plays better home, especially this season. It's been great to see the Cats come out and be able to defend Strahan. And as fans that go out there as well, you know, we love to get hyped up and amped up. It's always easier to do that when your team's scoring points or when they're winning. And this season so far, they have. So if they can keep it up and they can keep it rolling, again, one game is all that separates the Bobcats right now from making the Sun Belt tournament or not making the Sun Belt tournament.
I'm going to give a similar answer that I gave last week. And as it stands right now, I don't think they have enough to make it to the Sun Belt Conference tournament. But if that switch flips and they play the way they can, there's no doubt in my mind they can make it to the tournament and possibly make some noise when they get there.